Hey, football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown in the game, but his teammate scores instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you a second chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. With BetMGM's second chance offer, you have a chance to keep the fun going after the first player crosses the goal line. Try a first TD score wager with confidence today. BetMGM, make it legendary. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This specific promotional offer is not available in Mississippi, Pennsylvania, Puerto Rico, or Ontario. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 for New York. 1-800-NEXT-STEP for Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 for Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-ALL for Iowa. 1-800-981-0023 for Puerto Rico. Existing customer offer. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards paid back and unrestricted withdrawable funds. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
To find out what's really going on behind the music, sometimes you have to dig deep. I'm Dr. Mike, and on the new season of Going There, we're doing just that.
Art or music can be your escape and your therapy.
Going There is the podcast at the crossroads of music and mental health, where we have raw, meaningful conversations with artists like Noah Kahan, Julian Baker, Jason Isbell, Youngblood, The Head and the Heart, and Bishop Briggs.
I recently heard someone describe grief as glitter, where you'll clean it up, and then you'll find little pieces.
By opening ourselves up to these real discussions about mental health, we can foster understanding and gain even greater appreciation for the music we all love.
For me, like, my favorite songs give me happy tears.
So join me and some of your favorite artists on the new season of Going There with Dr. Mike, brought to you by Sound Mind Live and the Consequence Podcast Network. Subscribe wherever you listen to your podcasts.
The Opus, an exploration of legendary records and their ongoing legacy. Not just their history, but how this music continues to evolve. We're opening the vault on classic records upon re-release, delving into their inner workings and their lasting impact. Maybe you're a longtime fan and wants to go a little deeper. Maybe you're a first-time listener and you're curious to hear more. Either way, you're in the right place. Find us at Consequence of Sound or wherever you tune in to podcasts.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Hey, welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith With. It's an audio interview series presented by WFPK, Independent Louisville, at WFPK.org, Consequence of Sound, and the Consequence Podcast Network. Wherever you're listening from today, I hope you hit the subscribe button so you can keep up with us. We put out interviews every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, and would love to keep you up to date on every single one of those. Of course, you can subscribe at iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, Acast, Podchaser, really anywhere that you're listening right now. Please do hit that subscribe button. I'm Kyle Meredith. Today, my guest is Panda Bear of the band Animal Collective. Noah's got a brand new record under the Panda Bear moniker called Buoys that's just come out. We'll talk about how he calls this a brand new chapter, separate of the last three releases he's done. It's got a different sound for him that kind of threads the whole record together. We'll talk about both the music and the lyrics, but also how it has roots in the past, specifically a tie to the Person Pitch record and Animal Collective's Merryweather Post Pavilion. We'll talk about those anniversaries. It's the 10th anniversary of the Merryweather record, so we're going to jump back to 2009, do a little time traveling there as well. Then we'll also get the plans for the next Animal Collective music and a very special deep cut from Panda Bear that a lot of longtime fans have been hoping for an official release from. It's all in here. It's Kyle Meredith with Panda Bear.
What's up, Kyle? You having a good day?
I'm having a good day. It's drizzly and gray and everything that I love. So I'm
nice.
I'm comfortable.
I do like the drizzly days. Yeah. Super hard rain where I don't feel like I really don't like going outside. That's kind of a drag to me. But any sort of rain that I still feel kind of comfortable walking around in is okay with me.
Yeah. Congratulations on this.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, really fun listen. I want to start with what you said about this, how the previous records feel like it's its own chapter, and this feels like something new for you. I was hoping you would mm-hmm. expand on that a bit.
Yeah, mostly it comes from sort of realizing before I started writing songs for this one that there was a couple sort of techniques or ways of producing things, I guess aesthetics, you might say, that I really didn't want to keep going down that road. Or I guess I felt like there were certain things I'd kind of taken to the extreme, to the point where there was kind of nowhere left to go with them. And so I knew that the new thing was going to be something different. I can't say I had like a really specific vision of what it was going to become, but I figured not kind of allowing myself to do this sort of suite of things that the new thing would inevitably be something kind of different and fresh, at least for me.
And so what did that turn out to be? Because I know what I hear.
Yeah. I mean, I knew I wanted to do like a singular vocal kind of thing. The vocal was a bit more like intimate, almost like private in a way, something kind of a bit more like vulnerable maybe sounding. Because one of the things that I feel like ties the previous three records is like the vocal production and sort of this way I had of doing a lot of vocal stacking and harmonies and stuff like that. And I'd kind of tried on Homies to make it work, but could never figure out a way of doing the voice that sounded kind of pleasing to me. So Rusty's first suggestion was like the auto-tune stuff, and that kind of became sort of like the basis upon which we sort of built the rest of the vocal production stuff, which eventually kind of became the sound of the vocals on the record.
I know we hear some acoustics too, especially in Token. I'd heard you say a lot of these songs were written on the tour, and I thought, is that the connection here? Because any other time you hear about an artist writing a lot on tour, you know, one of two things happen is you get your road record or you get more of an acoustic, you know, sounding thing.
Well, I mean, it wasn't so much written on tour as much as it was like practicing the sung-tong stuff, because I hadn't really played guitar very much. So it kind of took me a while to kind of get my hands to do that again. I guess I got really weak hands. But so like just kind of like practicing the sung-tong songs and using the guitar, I kind of just got juiced to use that as like a device to write songs again, which is something I hadn't really done in a bunch of years, I guess.
Yeah, it's such a cool sound of what you've done with it, too. I mean, I love the way it plays out on that song, especially that song, I should say. And I want to bring up one more quote, too, because I thought this one was a bit more on the fun side, because you said it feels like what you like about these songs is it feels like there are sections of the songs that are actually missing. And I started thinking of the way a painter has to tell themselves at some point that the painting is done, and the restraint it must have taken to go, it sounds like parts are missing, and that's exactly how I want it.
Yeah, I mean, the big thing for us was kind of noticing that the sub-bass stuff, like the really deep low stuff, it just wouldn't really act in the same way if we added a whole bunch of sounds in there. It's like the more we would take out from the arrangements, the more that really deep stuff would really kind of punch out. And at a certain point, it felt like all the kind of high stuff and the vocal, to a certain extent, we kind of like rest on the sub-bass stuff. And it only worked that way when the arrangements were really empty kind of feeling. So that's kind of why we kept going down that road. It is a bit of a trade-off as far as like knowing that there's going to be a bunch of people who are going to listen to the thing on like laptop speakers or earbuds or something like that, something that can't really represent a lot of like the really subby frequencies. So it's, we did try to make sure that sort of listening experience would be pleasing on some level, but to me it's kind of like half the image or half the story in a way.
Well, speaking of the story, you know, as we talk about the thread that ties it all musically, what about lyrically? Did you find that was happening as well? You know, and I want to hit on that on the single there as well, because I would like to hear about Token and everything. I mean, when we hear about slapping the jelly ass, that's going to be a line that we're going to use for a long time out of context, I'm sure, around here. So,
Yeah, the lyrics are sort of the style of writing lyrics is kind of a reflection of what's going on in the music, as far as there isn't really like a narrative with the words. There isn't like a kind of linear sort of approach. It's more like patchworky or quilty or kind of a collage-y, I guess. Mm-hmm. But to be more specific about the Token song, that song's really about like kind of different kinds of love and loving and how they can get sort of confused and mixed up sometimes. So I wanted to put in these sort of like hypersexual interjections here and there, sort of as like a reflection of the sexual impulse, I suppose, and how it can like show itself in kind of odd moments sometimes in really like extreme sort of ways. So I hope that these phrases in the song would kind of act in that way.
working again with Rusty Santos, I mean, that should be brought up because, you know, famously, you all worked together on Person Pitch back in 07, which is now looked at as a landmark monumental record. You know, as you talk about this being a new chapter, is it interesting that it feels like, but there's still a thread to the past there?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, besides Rusty, yeah, there's like a bunch of parallels, not only to Song Tongues for me, but a lot to the Person Pitch record that I did. I mean, there's like the Rusty connection, but there's also sort of like a watery sort of theme that I feel like kind of goes with a lot of the Person Pitch stuff. There's Liz's crying on the Inner Monologue song, which reminded me of the Bros song mm-hmm. on Person Pitch, which has a lot of like crying figures in it. And of course, like the guitar, the acoustic guitar sort of ties it to Song Tongues. And it's the same like tuning on the guitar as Song Tongues. So there's a bunch of links to kind of older stuff, which I thought was kind of cool.
And especially as it comes around to these anniversaries, I mean, what nice way for that all to line up. And I hope you don't mind, I would like to jump back to the big one that just happened with the 10th anniversary of Meriwether Post Pavilion as well, because,
sure.
As we look back and the way history has tied it all together, you know, Person Pitch seems like it was so connected with how Meriwether also came to be, you know, the way it is. And now that sort of makes that album as well, in a way, intertwined with this new and, you know, as it all kind of, as you're talking about, swirls around each other. When you look mm-hmm. back on that 10 years ago, what stands out for you now?
I mean, for Meriwether, it's really like the kind of what was going on for me personally and sort of what was happening on a personal level in the band. And the sort of times that we had making that thing that kind of stick out to me or that resonate with me more than actually the music or the songs, which is maybe kind of a weird thing to say, but there was just very few like hurdles. There was very little adversity making that one. So I just, whenever I hear those songs or think about that record, I'm kind of reminded more of like the times rather than the music.
Did it feel like the leap that it's now been painted out to be when you all did it?
I mean, similar to this one, it did feel like a different thing for us, but that was kind of, or I guess I could say that continues to be kind of the modus operandi in a way with the group. I feel like just as creative people, we're sort of most attracted to the unknown or like something that's not within our grasp. I think we kind of get excited about kind of pushing ourselves into spaces that feel kind of uncomfortable. Sometimes that might mean that the results are kind of odd or maybe aren't immediately successful, but I'm okay with that. It kind of kind of makes me feel like the ball continues to roll, which is something I'm happy about.
It's also interesting to look back, you know, to see what influenced your all sound at the time, but really to see what was influenced in turn. I mean, it's talked about the Game Changer, not just in, you know, its own genre, not just in indie music, but even in, as we hear like alternative R&B these days. Like when I hear that, it feels like there is a line, a very thick line that connects back to what you all were doing that day. And
yeah, I mean, it's certainly flattering to hear, but at the same time, like I know there's been times where we might have made something and somebody would say, oh, you were obviously inspired by this thing. And it turns out like we weren't, or at least we weren't conscious of it. So I don't like to assume that even if something kind of sounds like something that we might have done, that it was serves as some kind of influence. But at least when people, you know, will tell me literally that, you know, something that we did in the past has inspired them in some way, it's definitely a very, very gratifying, very flattering, for sure.
And the amount you all had been working at that point, you know, for something like that to come out of, because I think under the Animal Collective, you know, timeline, there is an album like every year for 8 or 9 years. Did mm-hmm. success slow that at all? Did success kind of, you know, pull you guys back from working that, you know, that aggressively?
I feel like it pulled us more into like a cycle of kind of doing things the same way, not like making the same music, but it seemed like for a while there it was always the same three or four of us on every record, where I feel like sort of the initial idea of the group was that there'd be kind of all this different stuff happening all the time, as far as like each of us kind of making our own stuff and then different formations of us making stuff together. And I actually feel like we've kind of come full circle back to that. Like, it seems like these days there's a lot more sort of splintering off of various projects, and I'm encouraged by that. I like that kind of style.
In fact, I mean, if I have it right, Tangerine Reef last year was the first Animal Collective full length for you not to be on, right?
That's right. Yeah. So I'm excited by the newness of stuff like that.
What was your take on that? You know, having not been through the process with them, I mean, were you able to really check it out and live with it?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's cool for me that I can really enjoy it in a way that I can't really enjoy something that I'm a part of. It, just insofar as like making the thing, you're so kind of like in it in a way. It was nice to experience music from a combination of us that I could just approach in a really sort of pure way.
And that being, you know, sort of as it's touted as a visual album, I do wonder if that's going to rub off on future writing sessions at all, because it's such a unique piece, you know, as it stands.
Yeah, I kind of feel like the music almost operates in a different way when you have the visuals there with it. I mean, I still think it's cool on its own, but it does kind of feel like Voltron when you see it all together. It like becomes this sort of different beast in a way.
With so much going on, do you know your next plans within or without the group?
Yeah, I'll do a little bit of touring by myself to support the release. I don't think I'll do a whole lot, but just a bit in the spring. And then it seems like the band is going to get back together to work on some stuff, maybe in the summer or thereabouts. So I'm kind of shifting over to kind of Animal Collective zone again.
Never stops.
Yeah, I kind of can't. I don't mean to complain. I'm certainly happy to do it, but I gotta keep things moving. Gotta keep the train running.
I'm gonna ask a fan deep question here. About Atiba song, the Atiba song, if I'm saying that right, and if it'll ever get the official release, because it seems like a lot of your fans would love that.
no plans to do that, I'm sad to say. But I also can't say it'll never happen, but I don't know. That was a song that I made for my friend Atiba was making some kind of, it was sort of like a test video for a camera that they were starting to use for a skateboard video. And he just asked me for some music to kind of accompany this sort of test that they had done. And that's what I made the song for. I'm glad that people like it so much that they want like an official release. I'd have to, it would take me a while to find it. I think I'm not really sure where the studio project is, but yeah, I wouldn't rule it out entirely.
Congratulations again, Noah. Buoys is a lot of fun to listen to. I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to me about it. And we'll look forward to all the stuff that keeps rolling in from you.
Thanks, man. I appreciate your time today. Enjoy the drizzly day.
I will absolutely do that. Thank you.
All right, man. Have a good one.
All right, take care. Bye.
All right, peace.
And a big thanks to Noah right there. The brand new Panda Bear record is called Buoys. And don't forget, wherever you're listening from, please do hit that subscribe button. Whether you're checking us out on YouTube, Spotify, iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Acast, Podchaser, really wherever you're listening from, please do hit the subscribe button. After that, you can head over to WFPK.org. That's the radio station where I do a show every Monday through Thursday from noon to 3 Eastern. You can also find some bonus episodes over there as well. Great music playing all day long. Head over to Consequence of Sound for your music and film news. You can find me at Twitter at Kyle Meredith, Facebook/Kyle Meredith. That does it for another edition. I'm Kyle Meredith. I'll see you next time.
Consequence Podcast Network.
If you're an HVAC technician and a call comes in, Grainger knows that you need a partner that helps you find the right product fast and hassle-free. And you know that when the first problem of the day is a clanking blower motor, there's no need to break a sweat. With Grainger's easy-to-use website and product details, you're confident you'll soon have everything humming right along. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger. For the ones who get it done.
Why choose a Sleep Number smart bed?
Can I make my site softer?
Can I make my site firmer?
Can we sleep cooler?
Sleep Number does that. Cools up to 8 times faster and lets you choose your ideal comfort on either side. Your Sleep Number setting. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store and online. And now, the more you buy, the more you save on beds, bases, and more. Plus, get free premium delivery on any bed with base. Limited time. For J.D. Power 2025 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Check it out at a Sleep Number store today.